Hello everyone, it's Sunday again and I'm very delighted about today's episode. My guest is the amazing American blues storyteller and musician Big Daddy Wilson. I met Wilson for the first time back in, I think, 2008 when he was playing at Henrik Freischleder's Blues Unplugged Festival in our hometown Wuppertal, Germany. Since then we have met many times in different places all over Europe, and meeting Wilson is a really heartwarming experience anytime. In 2014, I even had the chance to step in for Wilson's great bassist Paolo Ligramandi and play a show with Wilson and his band, which was a huge pleasure as well. So I'm very happy about him accepting my invitation to join me on the show, and we are talking blues, racism, the state of our society nowadays, Wilson's new album, which is quite fittingly titled Hard Time Blues, and which will be released in September of this year, and much more. It was a really deep conversation which we both really enjoyed. We are glad to have you with us for the next hour and wishing you a good time. Hi Wilson, welcome to the Talking Spirits podcast, and thank you a lot for taking the time to be my guest today. It's really a huge pleasure to have you.
I'm happy to be here and thank you for inviting me, and hope to have a good time.
Yeah, I'm sure we will. Yeah, the last year, 2020, has been very challenging for actually everybody, but especially so for us musicians, you know, with everything, not being able to play shows, not being able to travel, not being able to meet up with people and work on projects. I mean, basically, all of this is very essential to us and to the way we are leading our lives. So how did this all affect you in the last year, and how are you feeling right now in January of 21?
Right now, I'm feeling good. I'm feeling hopeful and positive. But this pandemic has a major and a big effect on me, and I guess on all of us who are artists, who are, you know, who need this, need to use this platform, you know, the entertainment platform and the clubs and the tours to make a living and to communicate with people. So this was a big effect. You know, this really had a big effect. It really stopped us cold in our footsteps. And so I had to get used to it and find a different way. I spent a lot of time in the studio, my home studio, recording and working in that way. But we have to either way get around it, move around it. And so work around the ups and downs. And so I'm happy that I'm still able to do it. And we're still kicking.
We're silly and we're healthy. Yeah, but what you just said also for me, you know, like when it all started, I realized finally that, you know, I have time at my hands for things to do, which I was not able to do in years when we were touring all the time. So, you know, there's, of course, it's devastating, but there's also some upsides to it. If you have the perspective where you are willing to see them and also embrace them.
Correct.
I think. Really? But so you're working on new music as well.
Yes. I'm at the time working on a new album. But this downtime also, like you said, gave me a lot of chance to reflect on where I'm at and what I want and what else I want to achieve what's my priorities.
Yeah.
I'm happy for that.
Yes. I mean, same here. Like, you know, you get more time to spend with family. And you really can concentrate on what really matters. That was what it was for me. Okay, so if we go back in time a little bit, you were born in Edenton. I hope I'm spelling it properly.
Edenton
is a little town in North Carolina in the United States. And so if you try and think back of your childhood, you know, like, What are the things that come to mind?
Wow. so many beautiful things. comes to my mind. You know, you talk about childhood. And so we was very poor, but we didn't know it. I didn't know it, you know, because it seemed like everyone else was poor also. And we just went outside, play, and just had fun. Do what kids don't do today, I guess. We didn't have no computer, so we climbed trees and played in the mud. And
get dirty.
And, you know, and things like that. And the worst thing we might do is go to the neighbor apple tree and take some apples.
Take some apples. Yeah, I remember we have been doing this too, but not with apples. There was a cherry tree.
Cherry, you know? Okay. Now, we had apples, they had the plums, trees. It was a very fruitful area. And so the apples, plums, peaches, grapes, a lot of things grew down there in North Carolina. But as I grew older, we get a job after school working in tobacco or picking cotton or beans or, you know, working in crops in the fields. And so, you know, we did all sorts of things like that.
Okay. Yeah, but so basically, if you think back of your childhood, memories are uplifting and positive.
Very good.
That's a good thing to be able to say, I think. Same for me, you know, was wonderful when I was a little kid. Yeah, but how did music come into the picture for you?
Music was always in the picture. You know, in the South, we grew up going to church. And so it's always, you know, choir, you know, and you go to church all the time. And so we had my grandmother's sister, our house was in the middle, and my grandmother's sister's house was to the left and the other house to the right. And they went to the different churches. And whenever they went to church, I had to go to church with my grandmama's sister, go to their church. Go with my other grandmother's, you know, my grandmother's other sister, go to church. So we stayed in the church and all of those gospel singers in the choir. So music was always there. Then we also had the music on the radio that was the country music that was played. And then the music in the school band, you know, marching band. And so it was rich.
Yeah, so it was a part of your life from early on. But did you already sing back then in church?
No.
Okay.
No. I was way too shy. I feel no. I'm not a singer. We got those type of singers. They are wow, and I'm yes, powerful. And I'm more of a storyteller, and so I didn't sing around these type of gospel singers. I kept my mouth shut and just learn and look and listen, enjoy.
Yeah. But it certainly, you know, it laid down a ground for you for later, possibly. And since you just said you are a storyteller, I guess also, you know, you have to live to be able to tell a story. So, yeah, but I remember that you once told me that actually you discovered the blues, which is the type of music you are now very much into and you are known for, that you discovered the blues very late in your life. And also, which is astonishing, that this did not happen in the States, as one could expect, but it happened in Germany, in fact. So if you don't mind sharing a little bit about how the blues came into your life and also what the blues does mean to you now that you are in the blues for so long.
Yeah, a long time now. But in the beginning, I didn't know anything about blues. It was just gospel music, country music from the radio, and later it's the soul music, you know, James Brown and then the Funkadelics and all of these type of groups. But I joined the U.S. Army. I was sent to Germany. And we used to sing in the Army, sing what we call marching cadence. And so I used to sing that way. And called in cadence. And then I used to sing to my wife. We used to put on Teddy Pendergrass, and he would sing, and then I would sing along with him. And I used to record it on the cassette. And my friend used to say, "Man, you ain't doing nothing. You just hiding behind that man." And so, but I always felt that, man, I might got something here, but, you know, I was too shy.
Yeah.
And my wife, one day, decided to take me to a concert. It was the first time I ever went to a blues concert. And I believe it was a duo. It was a duo, Abby Wallenstein, and Steve Baker on harp.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And they was in Bremen. I was in Bremen, in Germany, in Bremen. And they was had a show, and they was playing it. And I heard that music, and I knew then. I said, "Wow, this is what I can do. This is what I'm writing, Hager. This is what I'm doing." And I was telling my wife that I was so excited because it was touching me. It was really, really calling my name. And so when I went back home, I continued to write, and then I started to search for a band. But you know, I don't call myself a singer, so. I said, what I'm going to do? And so the thing was, I was looking for a band that may be looking for a songwriter because I had written all of these songs.
So you just basically just had in mind to maybe pitch the songs to someone else to sing them.
Exactly. Exactly. But my thoughts in the back of my mind was maybe I might get an opportunity to sing if it's not too much pressure on me. I wanted to see. I wanted to be easy. I didn't want it to be under the pressure that I might need or have to sing. So it was a band that was looking for a singer, and their singer was getting ready to quit. So young guys, straight out of not out of high school, but it was in university, and so I said, well, shoot, I waited a long time. I answered the ad, and we met. In a practice room in Germany, and they wanted me to sing the song called Stormy Monday.
Mm.
I didn't know the song because I didn't know blues, right? And so they had this female singer they had who was quitting the band, young girl, and she would teach me the song Stormy Monday. And so she taught me the song Stormy Monday, and I would sing it. And these guys, they knew blues. They studied the blues. They knew. And so they heard me sing. They said, wow, you. And they wanted me in their band. I thought they was joking. So because I couldn't believe it. I'm no real singer. But they like what I'm doing. Well, okay. And that's how it started for me.
Okay. Yeah. But ain't that funny? I mean, you as like a black American man, you know, from the States, you discover the blues in Germany.
That's
playing, right. Like seeing some German white guys playing it.
Exactly.
And then you start singing the blues together with German musicians. And
exactly.
You know, it just shows how, you know, how universal it is and how, you know, how much the power of music as a connector is.
That's
prevalent,
right.
You know. Yeah, but then before you started going out on your own, you know, with your under your own name as a musician or a storyteller, you worked together with German musicians and you released some albums in cooperation with them. So I think that was somewhere around early 2000s. And so if you remember, you know, that time from what you just told me to the moment where you hook up with other guys and then you start performing and recording.
Yeah.
So
I really started recording and performing in the 90s. Little here and little there in the 90s. And when I started being serious with it, really, like you say, in 2000. But I did a lot of work with a lot of different German artists. And, you know, my first band was called Carolina Blues Connection.
Okay.
And so that was that band I was telling you about when I just started with those guys. Their name used to be Standby Blues Band, and then they changed it to the Carolina Blues Connection featuring Wilson Blunt.
Okay.
And then I started to, you know, work with many, many different other bands and just being a guest singer. Later on in the years, I worked with Gregor Hilton and being a guest singer for some of his projects. I've been a guest singer for, you know, Blues Company, you know, Torsho and the guys. for almost a lot of different bands. It's hard to try to name them all. And then I started my duo project. Well, I started my own band for a short while called Big Daddy Wilson and the Blues Caravan.
Okay.
And but we couldn't really get it thing running financially to make it work. So the bass player and myself, we decided to do a duo.
Mm.
And he started playing the guitar and I singing and playing percussions. And so that worked. And so we started to record in our first duo CD in 2004. Was it 2004? 2003, my big boss just said. And so, yeah, that was really the real beginning, because at that time I quit my daytime job and started living from music.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a big thing to do, to take that decision, I think, you know. But and then if I fast forward a few years, in 2009, you released your first solo album, which is had the beautiful title, Love is the Key. And
yes,
you have been releasing albums and touring the world ever since. So, you know, looking back now, what could you tell me about the process, you know, of taking the step to decide, okay, now I'm going to go, I'm ready to be on my own and go with my own name and write and produce, record my own songs. And also the question, but this question is actually answered already, you know, if you really planned on having a career as a solo artist like you do have now.
Yes, I always wanted to be a solo artist and do my own thing, because I always had a lot of ideals in my head that I wanted to do. And so I wanted to tell my story. And so it was but I'm not a musician in that way. I need folks. I need good people around me. So the thing about going on my own, it was a big step. Can I? Should I? Is this the right time? So all of those things was on the table. And will I get the right type of support then? To do your own thing, you really have to have a strong foundation. You got to have things, you know, other things in place to make it work. You know, things that behind the scenes before you go on stage. You know, you got to, you know, get that ball got to be rolling and turning and so that you're able to survive.
Yeah.
And so that was the big question. Am I able to organize this, all of this alone and get it done? The answer was no. My wife, I had to have some help. And so she quit her also daytime job to support me in my endeavors and my career, to manage my business, and it worked. It really worked, and it was a scary time because we have three children, but it turned out to be the best decision that I made. And like you said, then I signed up with my first solo CD with Thomas Roof Records, and it's been going uphill ever since then. And I'm happy. I'm happy about that. But I'm at the same time very happy about the way that I took to get there, because I learned so much from so many different people, and I have so much support from so many people. So all the people along the way who I was involved with and who have helped me, without them, I would not have made it also. It's not that I'm so smart and figured it out that I can do it. These guys really taught me a lot about the music business, and that was something I will always be grateful for, indebted to, because it is a beautiful thing, you know. We need each other, you know.
Yeah, so. I would definitely agree. Also, you know, when I think back of how everything happened for myself, because I'm. You know, I started very early, but I'm not, I have no formal education in music. And I just, just did it like old school way, by listening and trying to figure out stuff from records I loved. And then later, you know, so many beautiful people came and took me by the hand, so to speak, you know, and just said, yeah, hey, you're a nice guy and you can play. So I have also like a lot of people who really tremendously helped me. And still, I mean, the beautiful thing, what I think, is that this is still continuing, you know, in music. We still always can learn and always can grow. And I still do have mentors, you know,
yeah,
and people I look up to and I love and I can learn from. So
that's right.
It's really wonderful. But now that we are at this topic, one name which is connected to your career and especially, I think, to your albums is the legendary American blues musician Eric Bibb.
Yes.
So how did you two hook up and what can you tell us about your connection to Eric and the work you did together?
Well, it's a beautiful connection. Right now, just before we came together to do this interview, I'm working on a song for my new CD written by Eric. And so, we just keep sharing music. He would send me some music and I would send him music and then we would, you know, write on each other's stuff. And so that's where we at now. And so it's a beautiful thing. I met Eric. Well, I ran across his music from a cassette. They used to have cassettes. And I had a friend had a cassette and he played it because we was doing acoustic blues and he played it and it just knocked me out. And I said, wow, this is the guy I would love to meet. I would love to, you know, do it like that.
Yeah.
And we had a festival, me and my guitarist, Doc Force, German guitarist, great guy. He's simple guitarist, but great guy. And Klaus Grusset was on harp. And we had a show in Hildesheim. It was a festival. And Eric came on after we came on inside the big theater, and we was playing outside. And so we did our show and Eric Van pulled up and he said, well, that's Eric Bibb. And so, and after we finished our show, I was going to my dressing room and my dressing room was right beside his. So, and I said, wow, what to do? You know, I say I'm a shy guy, but, and I don't want to, you know, just go all up in people. I don't know the guy, you know, never met him.
Yeah, you don't want to step on people's toes.
Exactly. Yeah. I never met him. And I'm very shy, so, well, I don't know. So I tried to get my wife to do it. She wouldn't do it. I said, you know, you're the manager. Go ahead and do it. She wouldn't do it, right? And so I said, I'm going to lose this opportunity. So I just walked in there, knocked on his door, walked over there, introduced myself, and told him, hey, look, you know, who I were. And I just had my show. And I know all of your songs. I told you, man, I would love to do something with you. I told him like that.
Yeah.
And I brought my wife. I introduced him to my wife. And he said, you know what? Hang around and I might call you on stage after the show. And so I hung around and he did that. He called me on stage after the show. And because I told him I knew all his songs. And so we sung the song. I heard the angels sing and the crowd gave us a standing ovation.
Yeah.
The newspaper wrote about it. And that was the beginning of a beautiful relationship.
Wonderful.
And so, and after that, every time he would come to Germany, because I would follow him and try to, you know, be in contact with him. And so when I did my first CD with Roof Records, I had the song Walk a Mile in My Shoes, and I wanted Eric to sing on it. And so I showed him the demo. After he had a show in Germany. And then we had the producer, the promoter of the show, invited everyone to his house for a dinner.
Yeah.
And so I tagged along, you know, I was a groupie. So I tagged along, and at that dinner, I showed him my cassette in front of all those folks. He put it in the cassette player, and they listened to it. And he said, yeah, I'll do it. And so then we organized a date where he come in the studio and sing on this song.
Cool.
And there was the beginning of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Also, you know, now that I listen to you telling the story, I have also always done this, you know, telling if somebody really moved me and I heard something or somebody playing, And then I just went up straight up to them and I said, hey, man, I love your music and I love what you do. Mm-hmm. I would love to play together maybe sometime. But just the difference is that I was not shy at all. You know, I was like, and basically it's very astonishing, especially looking back, you know, how many of those things we dream of. And because the dreaming of doing something like that is, at least for me, is always based on a feeling. It's a very emotional thing. And so when I look back, it's really, sometimes I have to pinch myself when I think back of how many of those dreams became reality.
Yeah.
You know, and especially like for you with Eric, I mean, I have to say, I'm not really familiar in detail with his music, but I know that he is, you know, obviously he's a blues guy, but he's also very diverse. So he has done a lot of many different things. And so I can imagine that it's even after you have been connected for quite some time now, that it's still thrilling and exciting and beautiful to still work together.
Always learn
and be friends.
Always learn something from him. He's very humble, but very talented. You know, we're talking about a 2-time Grammy nominee.
Yeah,
and this guy is incredible. He's so humble. You would not, you know, think that the guy who, you know, on that level would be that humble. And just,
yeah, but basically, but very often, you know, this is the case because somebody like this, I mean, you know, got nothing to prove to no one.
Yeah, there you
and
go.
I have made the experience that, like, mostly the real, you know, the real guys who are really into it for the love of music, no matter how far they come, they always stay grounded and like a decent and good human being. You know?
Exactly.
And that's what I really like so much about.
Me too.
I mean, the music business has lots of very hard aspects and downsides, but this is one which is really beautiful.
Really, really so. And I had that experience with so many, like Abby Wallenstein, the first time. This guy, and still today, he's just so humble and sweet personality, and you just love to be around people like that.
Yeah.
And, I must say I've been blessed to be most of the time around people like that. I always have a great experience, you know, when it comes to people who I met, other musicians.
Yeah,
it's like their doors open, and I'm happy about that.
Yeah, same here. And you know, actually, when I think back, I had the huge pleasure of playing a show with you. We just did it once.
Yeah.
It was back in 2014 in Denmark.
That's right.
And I was stepping in for your amazing bassist Paolo Ligramandi, and you know, different than many other artists like to do it or do it for you. When you go out on tour, you almost always play with your own band, which is consisting, you know, of Italian musicians, and they have been with you for quite some time now.
That's right.
Yeah, and, you know, for me, like, besides playing with you guys once, I also had the chance to see you with your band. I think it was 2 years ago when we shared the stage in the Kaiserslautern, I think, to Kammergarn. And both experiences for me were really wonderful, you know. Like, I really enjoyed playing with you, and also I really enjoyed watching you guys and listening to you guys. And
thanks, man.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed it when we was together, played together. You came on board, you learned our songs, you play with so much passion. I mean, you just made me feel good. I mean,
and thank you.
I like that. You know, that was just so warm. You figure, how you like it? You know, you were just like, you was catering to me, give me what I need, what I want, how I like it, and just, you know, jump right in, hit the ground rolling. And so,
yeah, it was fun.
It was beautiful.
Very yeah. Beautiful. But if, you know, if we can talk about your band, because I really think they are amazing, especially for the type of music you are playing.
Yeah.
Really great sound, and you can tell that they are friends, they are hooked up and they play together a lot. So what can you say about your band and what it is which makes you staying with them for so long and loving the experience?
You know, I'm a very loyal type person, and music is so beautiful and so big. I feel these guys' heart and soul, and they bring it every night to the table.
Yeah,
and no amount of money could pay for that. It's something special that these guys bring. So I feel indebted. And so I could never repay that only by being loyal and bringing my heart and soul back. And so I just don't feel comfortable about, you know, using this musician or using the other one. If I could use these guys who helped me build this show, helped me bring this on the platform, bring this up to the people. And so for me, it's deeper than just playing a note or playing an instrument.
Yeah.
And so, they get it. They get it. And no matter how simple the song may be, I try to put a smile on people's face or make the people think or give some type of positive message.
Yeah.
The guys respond first to that message, and then we can deliver that. And so they are with me every step of the way. So I'm blessed to have that.
Yeah, yeah. And I think, you know, when I as a spectator or listener, when I watch and listen to you guys, I think you really can feel and see that, and that's why you guys all together sound so beautiful.
Thank you.
You know, it's really amazing. Yeah, and then, you know, I remembered, like, the time when I stepped in for one show. The album you were promoting at that time was your live album, Live in Europe, from Bremen to Paris.
Okay.
And obviously, you know, I didn't know about you before, and I think the first time we met must have been, like, 2008, when you played at Henrik's Blues Unplugged Festival. But, you know, and then over the years we met in, you know, in different occasions. Yeah. And it was always very nice, you know, we talked and it felt good. But actually, you know, and then of course I checked out some of the music, but it was like when you asked me to play, that was for me, that was the point where I really, for the first time, I really dove in, you know, and so that was the live album. And I tried, but I learned the songs we would play from this live album, which is a beautiful one. And so there was one song which really moved me and took me by the heart in particular. And it's still, you know, still when I listen to it, it has the same effect on me. And it's the song Ain't No Slave.
Okay.
And so would you be willing to share, you know, the story of the song Ain't No Slave?
Yes. Ain't No Slave was first a poem. You know, before I was writing songs, I wrote poems. And I thought that they would be songs one day, but I was not, couldn't play an instrument. So I wrote these poems. And every year in February in the United States, we have what they call Black History Month.
Yeah.
And on that time, we normally cite, you know, poems and reflect on our history, Black Americans. And so that was, I wrote that to be a poem for that occasion. And I wanted to, you know, take a look at, you know, our plot in life and where we come from and then try to put it to music. You know, Ain't No Slave, it may sound, wow, that's sad or bad, but this is not a sad song. It should not be. It's a positive song because it's a song of hope. It's a song about where we come from, of course, all what we've been through, but where we are today, and we're not slaves. We are free people, and so this is the message of that song. And but at the same time, to go forward, I feel you have to look back so that you look at your past and learn from your past and be able to move from there so that you don't make the same mistake. And so I always like to pay tribute to my forefathers of the blues, but also black leaders of the past, and reflect on what they've done so that I'm able to be who I am today and do what I do today. Yeah. And so that was a tribute song for that reason. Yes.
Okay. Yeah, but then, you know, but you also put it in music very beautifully, you know. So I think when I listen to it, I can feel, you know, even if we did not talk about this before, when I listen to it, I can really feel what you just told me.
Thank you.
So it's wonderful. And connected to this topic, if we try and take a look at the situation in the US nowadays, I would at least say, correct me if I'm wrong, but I would say, like, you know, racial segregation as it used to be is, of course, long gone. But I have the impression that, you know, racism still very present, and not only in the US, but also everywhere else around the world. So I know that, you know, that this might be a tough question to give an answer to, but how do you perceive, you know, the nowadays state of the society we are living in that regard? And also, what do you think, you know, what could be ways for us as humanity as a whole to get past things, past such things as racism?
I think that, yeah, it's sad to see that races have raised its ugly head again in the United States. And I think that we never addressed that problem seriously. And so that's why. And if you don't address something correctly, seriously, serious effort to fight against it, to work against it, it's going to always keep coming back.
Going to come back sometime.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so you get a leader like we just had, they just had, I don't call him my leader, like they just had, and you know, just take someone like that to spark the flame of racism again, and to just feed into this crazy thing, you know, called racism.
Yeah.
And so it's sad, but it's there in the States. It never went away, and so therefore it comes back to the forefront every once in a while, and some places never disappear.
Yeah,
this is a reality that the guys in the States got to live through and live with, or we in the whole world too. It's a reality. We as musicians have long understood that we are equal, that we are brothers and sisters. We know that. We feel that. I think that musician is a different thing that make their world go round.
Yeah, it's a different ball game.
There you go. And the rest of the world still fighting with the elbows and trying to me. And a musician know that it's not just about me. It's about us.
Yeah.
I like when Paul McCartney and Stevie Wonder had a song talked about the piano. Ivory and ivory. Mm. You know, the black keys on the piano and then the white keys on the piano. And you know you need both.
Yeah, if you take one of them away, you're lost.
Yes, to make a beautiful sound. And so until we really, really realize that, until we really, really believe that and live that way, we're going to always have serious problems. I, for you asked me the solution. I, for one, don't think that man would be able to solve this. You know, I'm a spiritual minded man, and I think apart from our Creator, we can't fix that. Because to fix my reasons by saying this is because to fix that problem, it's going to be a little bit too hard for a human. Because as much as you and I are connected and enjoy each other, we still are totally different, and that's good. That's not bad.
I think so. You know, I think the differences are actually a huge advantage.
Damn.
And we can, you know, on all sides, it's embracing the differences
there
and not seeing them as a problem is a huge chance, because we can learn from each other.
Exactly.
And we can experience things we would not ever come to on our own.
Yes.
Yeah.
And as soon as we started sitting in the judgment seat of each other, that's where I believe we come into the problem. See, I think it's a little deep because, you know, for example, I want to give you an example. If we talk about stealing, everyone knows it's wrong to steal. And so you make a law against stealing. That's okay. But the guy who steals bread because he's hungry, let's say the law means stealing means death. But the guy who steals bread for his hungry, you wouldn't think the death penalty is a just penalty. But the guy who steals because he's just trying to get rich, you see. And so how would you, now who are you to judge if he's stealing because he's trying to survive or he's hungry? That means you would have to be inside the man's heart. You would have to look inside it.
Yeah.
And we can't do that.
Yeah.
We humans can't do that. So that's why we would never be able to judge our fellow man properly, because we can't see all the circumstances that make him do what he does. That's why I think only our creator can do that. So we need to take a step back and not be so judgmental and just also live and let live. And we can do so many things for each other, but to judge each other, I think we fall into the trap.
Yeah, it's a trap. Yeah.
You know,
but also, yes. And I of course, I totally agree with you, but I also think I would like to add something to it. And I think that, and that what I'm going to say now, I'm saying from my experiences, okay. You know, being a guy who was born in a country which does not exist anymore and escaping from a war, which also was based on racial, you know, racial prejudices and whatever. So I think that while I agree with what you said, I think that we at least we have a chance to educate the young people and show them, you know, that basically there's no differences.
No, that's
and we are all in the same boat, if you want to put it like this.
I believe that's correct. We still have to take that chance. You're right. We cannot just say, oh, we can't fix it, so leave it like it is. We still must keep on striving to do better. You know, each one teach one, and so we got to educate our youth and keep trying to make this world a better place. That's why we, you and I, do music. You know.
Yes, exactly. So,
yeah. I agree with you.
As you already mentioned before, you are a family man.
Yes.
And you are leading a long-lasting marriage, and you are a father of three kids. So, and I mean, you already told me like how you convinced your wife to give up her job and join you in your endeavor. But
yes,
but how do you deal, you know, with connecting family life to the life of a touring musician? And also, how is being a family man influencing what you do in music?
Well, in the beginning, you know, I had started off touring and my wife was doing her job. And I quit. That was in my early day. I had a record contract. A record company was interested in me and they wanted to put me on tour. And my children were small. And so it just was not the smartest thing to do. So I quit. And the band was devastated. The band quit and it broke up. And one of the guys went all the way to New Zealand. He was really, we had worked so hard to get our record deal, and we get the deal, and I quit. Because, like I say, my three kids was young, and I knew that being on the road, that's too much to ask my wife to be home with the kids by herself and do it all, and not to be at home with the kids.
Yeah, and also it would have deprived you from a very important time in your life and in the kids' life, you know.
There
if you're
you
not there, you miss very basic important things.
There you go. Yeah. So I quit and I waited and until my kids got older, a lot older, finished school, and then I started back with music, and so that have helped me, because then my wife really supported my music career at that time. And so I could start back with my family being, you know, kids finished school doing their jobs and then they moving out the house. And so it was a lot easier, but it helped me to, you have to have a foundation. And if you got a strong foundation, I think you're able to handle many things in life.
Yeah.
And so that family foundation really was my rock, or was something that kept me grounded and kept me and supported me. And so they my biggest critic at the same time. So they would say, "Daddy, what's
hey,
that?
Hey, Dad.
Yeah.
What did you do?
Yes. Yes.
What did you do there?
Yeah. And I'm happy with that, because I know they got freedom of speech, and they tell me straight. All of my kids are musically inclined, so they can sing a little and play instruments. So I respect their views. So I run it by them, and they feel it. And especially my daughter, if she feels the song, then I know it's a good song. If she can't feel it, then it's better for me to go back in the room and work some more. But okay. I enjoy being a family man, but also now being able to do my music, and that's been a beautiful part of my life. A lot of my songs will reflect about my children, my family life. Every CD, I dedicate a song to my wife, so I write about the love of my life.
Yeah.
And so, I enjoy being a family man and being a musician.
Yeah, and it's so beautiful that you can, you know, you can put it as you just did. I think, you know, it's really wonderful, because as we all know, I mean, there's many of us musicians who would have to tell a very different story from what you just, you know, what you just shared. So, and especially, I have met your wife, of course, many times, every time we meet. And yeah. And you know, it's just anytime I meet you guys, I'm just happy and very, it's a very pleasant.
Thank you.
To be around you guys, you know. So cool. Yeah. Now, I mean, we have talked lots of topics like past and present. And so if you would try and take a look into the future, let's say, are there any particular like dreams, wishes, ideas which you have on your mind and you would like to realize and you did not have the chance to do so yet?
Well, I have lots of dreams, and the thing what I'm working on now is in the front, is a front runner. My new CD, I'm going to be recording this CD with a great producer from England, just moved now to Stockholm, Glenn Scott. He's also the producer on many of every BF CDs. But this guy is incredible. And so the CD is going to be, of course, blues, but a lot of songs that I've written that reflect on the world and the time we're living in now. And so I'm very excited about that. And I'm just, you know, happy and just want to continue to grow and to learn and to work with different people and to be the best human being that I can be, you know, to keep growing and kindness and keep trying to give to people and to, you know, listen, learn and live and let live.
Yeah.
That's my goal, you know.
Yeah, so, you know, actually pretty spot on, you know, you summed it up pretty spot on, like how, at least how I perceive how it should be, you know. So I'm very curious to, you know, to hear the new music which will be coming. And yeah, I would say, you know, as we are now approaching the end of our time together today, of course, the guest shall have the final word or the final say. So
okay.
Would there be anything you would like to share with our listeners to end today's episode?
Well, we need to stay positive. You know, we're living in a time, in difficult times, and we really need each other. We can't do it alone, and we don't need to fall victim to the fear tactics. We just really need to, I believe, understand that we are all connected and we need each other. And that's the only way that we're going to make it, if we really hold on to each other and to help one another. And so that's what, you know, like I say, music is about. That's what life is about. And this is what I'm about. I'm about, if I can, help someone, because I feel that so many people have helped me and you just want to give it back somehow, some way. If it's through music, if it's through helping with a helping hand or doing any type of physical work or information, knowledge, or any way you can help, then help. I think you will be happy and the world will be a better place.
Yes, I mean, I cannot add anything more to it than just to say that I, of course, totally agree with you. And I also think it's a very good note to finish on for today. So, you know, just what can I say? Thank you. Really, thank you very much for having taken the time and just hooking up and sharing. And I really enjoyed it.
Me too.
You know, wonderful.
And no problem. Thank you so much.
Yeah, you're welcome. And also, you know, my very best wishes to you and the family. And let's say, I hope we will be able to hook up in real life again sometime soon. And also, which I really wish for, play music together again in the future.
I believe we will.
Word.
Okay. Thank you so much, man.
Yeah, likewise. And have a nice day. Take care. Stay healthy.
You too.
And see you soon. You have been listening to Talking Spirits Podcast, episode number 22, with Armin Alic and Big Daddy Wilson. As I already mentioned, Wilson will release his new album Hard Time Blues in September, but there will be a single coming in May already. Make sure to check it out, and of course you can always have a great time listening to Wilson's comprehensive and rich back catalogue, and you definitely won't regret it. Next week's episode will be one in German again, and my guest is the German music lover, architect, city planner and politician Rainer Wiedmann. Thank you for staying with us today. Please feel free to share the word of the Talking Spirits podcast with all your friends. There will be many more Talking Spirits joining us in the future, and I'm looking forward to keeping up doing this for a very long time. Of course, you can also feel free to contact me if there's anything you want to share with me or if you have any ideas concerning the future of my project. Have a nice week, stay safe and healthy, and see you again next week. Bye!